Good afternoon. You're listening to KZSU Stanford. The program is Open Air with Sherry Huber. We've just been listening to Satchmo with Foe, and the show was No Cover, No Minimum. Sherry, welcome back.
Thank you.
It's good to be back.
It's very good to be back.
Yeah.
I guess we have decided not to call the whole thing off.
Call the whole thing off. Which whole thing would that be?
I was just going along with our theme song.
The song.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. It's great to be back.
It is.
We're here live today.
Yes.
And I'm
feeling quite live today.
You look pretty lively. Fully switched from your time zones back to California time?
Almost. Yeah.
Great.
I'm almost completely here.
Wonderful. Well, that's your job, right? Being here.
That's right.
And that's what we're going to talk about all day long, is being
uh-huh.
here.
Uh-huh.
And I bet we'd love to hear from absolutely anyone.
Yes, whether they're here or not.
Here or not here, or trying to get here, or struggling to be here. Mm-hmm. If you'd like to join our conversation today, please give us a call. You can reach us at 650-723-9010. I'm not sure if I mentioned this. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, you've been a Zen student and teacher for more than 30 years, assisting people in getting here.
Mm-hmm.
Great. And if you want to tune in today, you can pick us up in the Bay Area at 90.1 FM. On the internet, you can reach us at kzsulive.stanford.edu. And so we'll be talking about all topics Zen.
Yes.
What it means to be present, what takes us away, what skills we can acquire to come back to the present.
Mm-hmm. That all sounds good.
That sounds good. Let's talk to a caller. I'd like to welcome Brett from Redondo Beach. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber. Brad, can you hear us now?
I'm here.
Great. Welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Great. Thanks a lot. I appreciate you guys having me on.
Great.
Listen, I've called before. And I'm calling tonight, I guess, under different circumstances from when I spoke to you last time, which is, I guess, was a few months ago. I was giving you guys a call because my sister, who is going to be 35 this July 7th, she died on June 1st.
Oh.
And she, I guess, had a dual diagnosis. She had a mental illness that she was diagnosed with when she was 18, where she was what's known as a borderline disorder. And as well, for the past 2 to 3 years, she had suffered from drug addiction, which seemed to go hand in hand with her mental illness.
Mm-hmm.
So, unfortunately, she died from what we believe is a drug overdose and possibly a drug-assisted suicide.
Mm.
And I guess, of course, it's a devastating time for my family. I'm getting ready to move back east, where I'm originally from, to be with them. But I was wanting to find out from Sherry, in regards to her training, what is the Zen perspective on death? You know, I was originally raised a Christian, and, you know, times like this, you know, when they move you to the core in regards to what your beliefs are, in regards to what happens when we die, I was just wondering how it's looked at from a Zen perspective. I know maybe through other aspects of Buddhism, maybe it's thought of in regards to reincarnation, but... I'm going to dare to say the assumption that maybe the Zen answer would be, we don't know what happens when we die.
Well, Brad, you're right on target with that one. My understanding is that there were a couple of topics that the Buddha refused to address. One being, where are you before you're born, and what happens to you after you die? And his take on that apparently was that it's speculation, and it gets quickly into beliefs and takes us away from where we are now, which
right.
is the only place where we can actually be, and
right.
and where there can be a sense of well-being or all-rightness. Now, if you move over into something like Tibetan Buddhism, they are less hesitant than the Zen types to tackle these topics.
Right.
And so there, I don't know if you've ever encountered something like the Tibetan Book of the Dead.
You know, honestly, most of the stuff that I've read on Zen is just from a few other people and most of your stuff, because I hate to say it appeals to me most, but in terms of what I was dealing with, it seemed to make the most sense at the time I read it. So, in terms of dealing with self-hate and other things, the issues that you addressed.
Well, there's quite a lot of interesting stuff in that, you know, where people are talking about the transition from life into death and all of the various stages that people go through, and the speculation that there are, in fact, heaven states and hell states, but they're seen not as permanent states as they are in some other traditions, but as temporary states, essentially the person reaping the karma of a lifetime. So if a person feels very good about what they did, then they'll probably spend a little time in heaven. And if they feel very bad about what they did, then they might spend a little time in hell. And then it's just a stopover on the way to a next incarnation. Now, the Buddha didn't teach reincarnation. He actually taught rebirth. And essentially what that, my understanding of what that is that the life force animates all sorts of forms. It's the same life force. It's really the same matter in different configurations. So you know, it's not at all out of keeping with our understanding of physics. So, in that sense, you know, and many of us do. I certainly do, of my own experience, have a sense of many lifetimes. Not that there was necessarily an I, you know, not Sherry Huber, right, who, but that life has happened through time, and that the conscious awareness that animates this form has also animated many, many other forms.
Right.
So in that sense, there is not a, in Buddhism, there is not a strong, well, there's not hopefully any belief, but an idea that life ends.
I guess I want to be okay with that with myself, you know, and there's such a desperate need right now in my process of grieving to want to believe something.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
You know, and as in addition to being present, there's also that constant reminder in terms of being present of the fact that she's no longer with us.
Yes.
You know? And that's very difficult to think.
Oh, it's very, like, it's unimaginable, isn't it?
Well, you know, I mean, you probably remember, I've read some of your stuff in terms of, you know, when someone that close to you dies, you can replay it again in your head and again and again and again, and it seems new every time you hear it.
Exactly. It is an amazing process of trying to grasp a reality like that.
Very much so.
Yeah, just watching the system trying to take it in and make sense of it. And in my experience, it takes a very long time for that to happen. It's just not real. Somebody could say, did this happen? And you would say, yes, it did. But that's not the same as the system actually getting it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Well, you know, we spread our ashes, and it was very surreal in regards to that, just in regards to the fact that here's someone I've spent 32 years of my life with. There was four of us, and now there's three. Yeah, yeah. It's very hard.
It's extremely hard. One of the things, now, this, again, I'm not saying this as any kind of authority, okay, so don't don't hold this against Buddhism. Okay. But one of the things that I find to be helpful and that feels so to me is that it's been a month, is that correct?
Yes.
Yeah. She still has the ability to hear you.
I certainly hope so, in one way, shape, or form. If it's the wind blowing through the air that reminds me God's there, whatever. But
right.
No, I hope in one way or another. Sure.
And so it might be helpful for both of you to have some conversations,
right,
to talk with her, and especially focused on the what she gave to you, what she accomplished in this lifetime, what she brought to you.
Right.
Because if there is validity to this this notion that we were talking about of the transitions, then she's still in that period of time of transition. And it could potentially be helpful for her to have a lot of information that this was a good life. This was a helpful, loving, productive incarnation. And just for ourselves, we can know that it's easier to let go of something that we feel good about than something we feel bad about. So to kind of reinforce the beneficial, loving aspects of what she brought to your life might be very good for her and for you.
Right. Yeah. You know, I guess lastly, I don't want to keep you on here forever, but I guess if there's one last thing about it that I'd like to say is if be it that we are as people, and there's no consciousness after this life, at least she is no longer in pain. She was in pain for several years. And despite the fact that my family and I miss her, it's almost, I'm wondering if it's somewhat of a blessing that she's gone in terms of how much she was hurting while she was here.
Uh-huh.
I know that sounds crazy to say, but...
Oh, no, not at all. And I don't think anyone who has experienced a tremendous amount of pain would be unable to understand what you're saying.
Yeah, and people are like, could you have saved her? I'm like, you know, I don't think if I would have even had my arms around her for a month, I could have saved her from what was going to happen.
Yeah, yeah. And that, Brad, that has to be a comfort.
In a way, it is.
Yeah.
You know, that and as well, it kind of breaks through the family's conditioning with what's happened. I almost consider it to be like this strange balance that happens within the pain. There also comes a process of healing where the family is hit with something so hard it breaks them beyond their normal patterns of conditioning to realize what's really important.
Yeah. Yeah.
With my own depression and other things, it really kind of puts everything in perspective.
Yeah.
So in that way, it's a blessing, dare I say it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And that's exactly the kind of thing that it might be helpful to communicate to her.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you so much for your time, Sherry, as always.
I'll keep you in my meditation.
Great. Thank you so much.
Take care.
All right.
Thanks for joining us, Brad. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on KZSU Stanford. You can join our conversation today by calling 650-723-9010. Wow, that was a lot.
Yeah. It was very, very difficult, very painful. I was thinking, I was recalling when I was talking with him about when I was 18, my mother died in a car accident, so it was very unexpected. And I woke up, I may have mentioned this the last time something like this came up. I woke up, came to about 6 months later, married and pregnant and living in another part of the state. And it was, I mean, I can remember the moment I woke up. I can remember where I was standing, and it was just, oh, my God. Now, all during that 6 months or so, if somebody had said, who are you, where are you, I'm sure I could have answered them. But the system had not taken it in. And it took all that time to process that event that was just so completely unacceptable in my reality. And I know that I just essentially left. So all of that encouragement that people give, you know, grief experts say don't make any major decisions for a month after something like this. I was just talking with some folks who fellow had a very traumatic experience. His brother died quickly, unexpectedly, and he was out doing some work with a chainsaw and almost cut his leg off. And my response when I heard about it was, yes, you know, that's people in that state of shock really shouldn't use dangerous equipment. You know, we just don't realize that there's this shock going on as the information is coming through. It's like it's coming from a vast distance. Through layers and layers and layers and layers of identity before it can actually reach a place where yes, this is who I am now. This is my reality. I'm a person whose sister died in this way, or I'm I am somebody whose brother just died, we're very vulnerable during that time. So to, again, we may not feel it. We may think to ourselves or seem to ourselves that we're perfectly fine. Sometimes the system gives little signals. I mentioned that my specialty is losing keys. And so as soon as someone close to me dies, I just, you know, go out and get about 8 or 10 sets of keys made because I know I'm just going to start losing keys. And yes. I can do anything that I want to try to bring enough conscious awareness or attention for it not to happen, and it happens anyway. Yes. And it just lets me know that even though I think I'm really here, there's a huge part of the system that's focused on trying to integrate this very upsetting and difficult piece of information.
Yes, yes. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. If you'd like to join our conversation today, please call us at 650-723-9010. Sherry, as you were talking, I was thinking about, you know, we have people that are important in our lives, and if suddenly they're gone, there's a lot of places within our bodies, within our systems, where those these people reside.
Yes.
And it seems like that's what you're talking about.
Yes. And suddenly, what was a connection, we can feel that there's just a vacancy there. There's a the person is not occupying that place in the same way.
Yes.
So we can feel lost and disoriented and you know, kind of cut loose or disconnected. Yeah.
And over time, we learn to integrate that, accept that into our system.
And people will talk about the various stages of grieving. Often when we lose somebody close to us, we have a resistance to accepting that fact because it feels like their death is the connection. So if I let go of my reality around that, my focus of attention on the loss and that sort of thing, then I'll lose them altogether. But of course, what people who have been through it will tell us is that when we accept, and there's no hurrying that process, it takes as long as it takes.
Yes.
You know, and culturally, it's 3 days, which is just absurd. In 3 days, you're just reeling from the shock. And many people will report that around 6 weeks is the is the hardest place. That's one of the first points when the kind of the numbing of the shock falls away. And everybody else has gone on with their lives. We're not really focused anymore on the tragedy of it. And then the person who's experienced the loss is still in that same state of loss.
Wow.
So it goes for as long as it goes. And then one day we realize that we have accepted their death in a in a different way. And many people will report that then there's a feeling of having the person again.
I see.
I'm not just focused on their death and their loss. Now all of the good times are there. The memories, the fun that we had, the and that's a huge piece of the healing.
And I can enjoy that person.
Yeah, and you
again,
can enjoy them once again. It's not just the loss of them.
Yes. Yes. Wonderful. Sherry, I was thinking as you were talking and as Brad was talking as well, the knowledge that we're going to die someday, I have found very helpful as a part of Zen practice to be aware of, I was born, I'm going to die. For me, it brings an immediacy to my life and to what I want to do.
Yeah, and of course, we can have that same awareness about everyone in our lives.
Yes.
To be with people in the awareness that this could very well be the last time we're together.
Yes.
When we talk about that, often people say it sounds so morbid, but I don't experience it as morbid. I experience it as you're saying it. It brings an appreciation, an immediacy. You know, if we're together, I don't want to miss this, assuming that we're going to be together again for an untold number of years. Because
right.
What if we're not?
Because
and
who
then,
knows?
And then I missed this opportunity.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think it makes it gives a sweetness to life.
Absolutely. Wow. If you'd like to join our conversation today, please give us a call. You can reach us on 650-723-9010. We have a caller on the line here. I'd like to welcome Lisa from Philadelphia. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Hi.
Hi.
Good evening.
Good evening. Well, I was calling because there's something that's been going on in my life that I wanted to kind of look at what's going on with me.
Mm-hmm.
So recently I found out that my father had been hiding a medical condition that he has from me, and it's gotten to the point where it's a really high blood pressure, and he's having arthritic pain that he actually has a numb arm that just doesn't even work anymore, and they think that the blood pressure has actually been having giving him strokes, and it's just a lot of problems.
Oh, my goodness.
A lot of problems, right. And so what had happened was he drinks alcohol, he smokes, he hasn't lived a very healthy life, and now he's kind of, I guess, paying the price for it, catching up with him a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So we had to have a sit-down with him to kind of talk about what was, you know, going on and things that we could do for him. And I realized that he was really depressed. I realized he was extremely depressed about the pain and everything that had been going on. And anyway, so what I did was I decided that I would help him. And so I started finding people, and it seemed like people were just falling in my lap that could help him. I found a yoga instructor who wrote a dissertation on, you know, arthritic pain, and she could work with him one-on-one. And, you know, I found all these neurologists that I just happened to know from where I work who were around, and anyone really I would walk up and ask if they knew someone who knew someone. And he's actually going to be getting all of the help that he needs from the perfect people that I would ever want to find to help him. And a lot of it is because of my effort, and I see that, and I acknowledge myself for that. But, okay, so the thing is...
I'm curious to see what's going to come out of that, but...
The thing is, there's this part of me that resents helping him, that resents the fact that when there was a time in my life when I was pretty depressed, I was, you know, suicidal, I was having the hardest time in my life, that he kind of looked at me and said, you know, pick yourself up and, you know, get out of here kind of thing, and, you know, just deal with it. If you want to kill yourself, just do it and stop talking about it, you know, that kind of thing, and kicked me out of the house, you know, with nowhere to go. So now here I am helping him, and there's this part of me that doesn't want to help him. I mean, or wants to yell at him and be like, look what I'm doing for you, and you couldn't do anything for me. And it's a really hard thing because I have a spiritual practice. I do believe in, you know, inherent goodness. I believe in compassion. And here I am, part of me resenting helping this person.
And
strange feeling.
And can you sympathize with her?
I can, but the first thing that I want to do is just push it away and go, that's an evil thing to think, and let's not think that.
It's it's interesting to me. So there you were, depressed and suicidal.
Right.
And your dad said, get out of here.
Right.
So now you are feeling resentful about being required to help him. And what you're saying to that part is, get out of here.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, it's unacceptable.
Mm-hmm. So that's a family tradition. Right?
Right.
Yeah, if something is unacceptable, we just say, get out
right.
of here. Yeah. So it's easy to understand how you learn to have that approach, right?
Right.
Yeah. And it's also... if you were going to project onto your father when you came to him and said, oh, I'm so depressed, I'm thinking about killing myself, how do you think he felt?
Well, you know, I can see it. And knowing my father, I think he probably felt helpless. He probably felt like there was nothing he could do for me, and he didn't know what to do. and he also probably felt like he's depressed. Uh-huh. And it's scary when he's depressed. It's scary when he feels suicidal. And so I think he kind of just freaked out because he didn't know what to do for himself and probably didn't know what to do for me either.
Mm-hmm.
I think that, yeah.
Yeah. And so you can sympathize then with a part of you who feels that way.
Say that again.
Well, that would just like him to take responsibility for himself and get on with his life. Because it's really overwhelming. It's hard. It's scary. It's all of those kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we don't have to probably speculate too wildly to guess that there was a level of resentment that he felt.
Mm.
Being asked to take care of you when he's struggling just to keep his own head above water. So, yeah. You know, it's one of those, you have a spiritual practice, right? And you,
right.
You value compassion and kindness. And,
right.
Well, here's somebody who needs it. Okay. she's having the incorrect spiritual response.
Right.
So, can you embrace her? Can you understand how she would feel that way?
Yeah.
It's perfectly understandable.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
If it were your best friend in the same exact situation, you would say to her, well, yeah.
Of course, yeah.
Of course you'd feel that way. Why
right.
Why wouldn't you?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
See, but it's me.
Right. I know. And we hold ourselves to a higher standard, don't we? Yeah. And it is
right.
Kind of funny because this voice inside of you is saying, how could you? I mean, you are a spiritual person, and
right.
Look at how you're responding. Well, that voice is holding itself up as the authority on how to be spiritual, and look how it's treating you.
Yeah,
it's shaming
well.
You for not having the right response.
Mm-hmm.
So it's hardly meeting the standard its own self. Right?
Right. It's not
yeah.
A very compassionate voice.
No.
Telling me
no.
How it, bad I am.
That's right. It's not compassionate to point out to people that they're not being compassionate.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And yeah. Yet when we're inside that loop, we believe it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So the last piece of this is how can I can't change the fact that my father kicked me out when I was depressed. I can't, you know, there's no alternate reality where that didn't happen, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I have that pain, and I obviously, mm-hmm. It's obviously alive in me because it's coming up. So what can I do to comfort that, or what can I do to...
Yeah, well, see, I think that the secret is going to be for you to be the parent that your father was not able to be.
For myself, you mean?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, and ironically, for him.
For him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and you know, we have a lot of conditioning that says this is really unfair. The people who conceived us
right.
Should take care of us.
Right, right.
But we have an awful lot of evidence that conception, being able to conceive a child, is not the same as being able to care for a child.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So he was able to give you life in that sense, but not to nurture that life.
Mm-hmm.
And can you now nurture that life?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it seems like it's easier for me to cut other people a break than it is to cut myself a break, that's for sure.
Oh,
and it
yeah.
seems like my father and most of them, you know, both of my parents are like an extension of that so much. Do you know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
Like, it's hard for me to cut myself and them a break. Everyone else gets a break, but
that's right.
But
yeah.
Us.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
and of
because
course,
there's some kind of like extra thing that they're supposed to be able to give me or do because they're my parents,
and something extra that you're supposed to be able to give or do just because.
Right. Right.
Yeah. Now, in my world, that's called self-hatred.
Uh huh.
So, because what it comes down to is. Everybody else is worthy of compassion, but not me.
Mm.
And, you know, there's really no argument to support that.
Right.
Yeah. So to move into that place of being the person you really needed a parent to be.
Right.
There was nobody there to do that. Nobody there to do that. You couldn't do that. They couldn't do that. There was nobody there to do that.
Right.
Now there is somebody there to do that. Mm-hmm. And the secret is not to draw upon that compassion for yourself, for all of the parts of you who are acceptable, mm-hmm. but to give that compassion to everybody.
Right.
Yeah. So you have a part who's resentful. And again, it's not hard for me to understand how that part would feel resentful. Mm-hmm. So can you let her feel her resentment, give her the unconditional love and support that she did not get then,
yeah.
and see how she is after that?
Yeah.
'Cause that's what you wanted from your father.
Yes.
You wanted him to love you unconditionally, exactly as you were.
Right.
And then, that's what she still wants.
Yeah, definitely.
He can't do it. That's you know, at some point we just have to say they can't.
Right.
It's a nice theory, and they can't.
I mean, I guess that speaks to acceptance, because, you know, there's this part of me that still thinks, you know, well, couldn't he just, you know.
And the, right.
Couldn't he, you know.
That's right.
Won't he, you know.
And then you get to no.
No.
You know, you're whatever age you are.
Right.
And you are more mature than your father. And that's just how it is.
Right.
So we get to that place, well, then somebody has to be the parent.
Right.
And as annoying as it is, I'm afraid it's you.
Right. And it's okay to...
It's okay to be annoyed.
I have to be the parent.
That's right. It's okay to be annoyed.
Right.
You know, you don't mind being a parent for your own children.
Right.
But having to be a parent for yourself and for your parents, that's, you know, that they said it wasn't going to be that way.
Right.
Yeah. Well, they were wrong. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right, well, thank you. Thank
but
you
the
very much.
The one thing I want to underline is that the first person to be cared for is that one who feels the resentment.
Mm-hmm.
Because to leave her for a moment longer uncared for, mm-hmm. while you care for somebody who rejected her,
mm-hmm.
oh, that's a bitter pill to swallow.
Right.
So to put her first, take
right.
care of her first, and then take care of your father. And, you know, there doesn't have to be a big time lag there. But to let her know
right.
that she comes first with you.
Yeah, and that it's okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Take care.
You too.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, Lisa. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. You can join our conversation today by calling 650-723-9010. Coming up at 6 p.m., we have DJ Decca with At the Cafe Bohemian. Sherry, I was thinking during the call with Lisa, you were talking at the end there about what is most compassionate for all, and it seems like sometimes we forget that I am a part of all.
Yes. Yes. We are deeply conditioned to forget that. Mm-hmm. So my image for it is there's a pie, and you're going to cut the pie into pieces to share, and what that means is you give a piece to everybody else. And what we have to learn is, no, I get a piece of the pie, you get a piece of the pie, everybody else gets a piece of the pie.
Yes.
But to leave ourselves out is not noble. It is misguided.
Yes.
It does not make us a better person. It
yes.
makes us resentful.
Resentful. That's the first word that came to mind.
Yeah, it makes us bitter and resentful and ungenerous, and really, who can blame us?
Yes, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And as you were talking there also, we talked some about having a mentor within ourselves. And it sounds like that's what you were getting at with Lisa.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that she, that, and that's, you see, that's what makes it spiritual practice. That's what's going to transform Lisa.
Mm-hmm.
Not somehow managing to get what she needs from her father.
Yes.
What's going to transform Lisa is becoming that unconditional love and acceptance. Feeling it first for herself.
Yes.
My teacher's way of saying it was, how do you hope to end suffering in the world when you won't end it in the one place you can experience it?
Exactly.
So first end this person's suffering, and then move on to any and everyone else.
Yes.
And the thing about it is, you know, the other wonderful thing about it is, according to the Buddha, and in my experience, in my humble experience, he's right about this, we each have one person to save.
Yes.
So it's really Lisa's father's job to save himself, which doesn't mean she can't do everything that she can do. But as we heard from Brad, you know, no matter, he has a strong sense that whatever he did, he could not have interfered with his sister's life going the way it was going to go. She was in charge of that. Lisa's father is in charge of himself.
Yes.
We can be as kind and loving and compassionate toward others as we can possibly be. And we cannot fix them and we cannot save them.
Yes.
But we can save ourselves.
Yes. Makes it easier that way.
It does. It makes it very clear whose job is what.
Because other people don't always do what we want.
Yes. Yes. Always.
Always.
Or ever.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Absolutely. We're going to take one caller here, and then we're going to take a quick break. I'd like to welcome Jenny from Anaheim. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Hi, Michael. Hi, Sherry.
Hi, Jenny.
Just that last thing you said, Michael, about fixing everyone else, that's what I'm calling about.
Huh?
I'm dealing with communication issues with my long-term partner. And I feel like if I can just fix how she communicates, then, you know, we'd be just fine. So I need to work on bringing it back to me and getting patience and trying not to get frustrated. Because I have my, you know, I've communicated the same way and it's worked for me my life. And here
and what's wrong with you?
Exactly.
That my way of communicating isn't working with you.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And every now and then that thought just flies out the window and I get very frustrated and that doesn't help the communication any.
Uh-huh. Because what we are not trained to do is say, now what am I missing here that I'm not being able to receive this person's communication? Because it doesn't feel like that, does it?
Not at all. I can
not
point out,
all.
You know, every flaw I see.
Yes.
But not the gaps of what I'm missing.
Exactly. Oh, and isn't that helpful to realize? That's like, you know what you know. You know that whole thing? And you know what you don't know, but you don't know what you don't know?
Uh-huh.
Yes.
That little process, that's exactly what you're looking at, isn't it?
Right.
Yeah. And unless you just assume that this person is demented, evil, you know, some other thing that would make us wonder why you were in a long-term relationship with such a person.
Correct.
Yeah. So you know that that's not it. Right. So there's some big gap there.
Yeah. And when I step back and I get perspective, you know, like now, like we're talking about it in the abstract, it's very understandable and doesn't seem like that big of a deal.
Yes.
But then I'm in the middle of the situation and I just can't understand why it's not working.
Well, now let me ask you this.
Yes.
When you're in the middle of the situation, do you try to step back and see which part of you is there?
I do. And I feel like I can do that, but only to a certain point.
Yeah.
It's like there's a breaking point and I realize, okay, no more perspective. I'm back to being frustrated.
Yeah. Because that, I just heard when you described it, you know, when we're talking like this in the abstract, which I translated into when you are disidentified.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
So you're in a person who can step back and be objective and you know that nobody's evil and there's something legitimate going on and that your perspective is probably as limited as hers. We doubt it, but could possibly be. And then, boom, you're in it.
Yeah.
And that part of you who is invested in, this is the way it is, and I'm right, and you're wrong, and what is the matter with you,
right.
Just takes over.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, of course, through that person's eyes, you can't see anything except, this is not going anywhere.
Right. I'm totally blind to everything else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And that's the work, isn't it? I mean, we're all nodding here. Everybody in the studio is nodding, going, yes, yes, that's right.
Yeah.
And then we can get to, and now what do you do?
Right, right.
Yeah, because we forget that, from my perspective at least, this whole thing is about you seeing through this limitation that you're right up against.
Mm-hmm.
It's not about getting her to be different.
Right.
Yeah. We all know that's the right answer, right? Yeah. But what we forget is, yeah, it's about me seeing through this limitation that it, this thing, this way I am, and not with, you know, not looking at it with self-hatred, mm-hmm. but mm-hmm. this thing that is getting between me and my heart. Mm-hmm. I have this piece of identity that when it comes right down to it, I choose over someone I love and that I choose over my heart.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it'd be wonderful if it were just in this situation, you could say, okay, you're out because I don't want to deal with you any longer.
Mm-hmm.
And then you would live happily ever after.
Right.
But of course you wouldn't.
Right,
because
right.
you recognize that this is you, not somebody else.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, to me, the good and the bad news is you have to just keep going into the situation, bringing as much conscious awareness to it as you can. You know, the good news is that you're in a relationship, so the two of you can talk about it.
Right.
You know, okay, now, what is the part of me that meets the part of you? Because both of us are here.
Yeah.
Right? Because you can probably be in another situation, disidentified from those two people, and you can do just fine.
Mm-hmm.
We guess.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because you are in relationship, right?
Right, right.
If it had been like this all the time, you wouldn't have gotten this far.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So the two of you can look at, you know, what is it? What is it about our process? Because, boy, I get into this, and then the other person can say, well, yeah, and I get into this. And at what point do you lose consciousness? Because I lose consciousness when, you know, and then it becomes something that you're working on together.
Right.
Yeah. So have you read, by any chance, our latest book, When You're Falling Dive?
No, but well, I have it on the bookshelf.
Well, very good. It's making its way into your mind and heart.
Yeah.
So there's a little section in it where I talk about working with couples.
Okay.
And that what happens working with couples is that the couple comes in, and depending on the state of the relationship, they get as far away from each other as they can, right? And then they start throwing the problems down between them.
Yeah.
And then they start fighting with each other over the problems, right?
Yep.
And so my job is to get them sitting together next to each other,
yeah.
looking at our problem.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So that kind of communication that I was just describing can be a big step toward that, you know, where we have this thing that we do, and we're going to, between us, figure out what it is that we're doing. Because this is not us, because we are two people who love each other and who are kind.
Right.
Yeah, and then we become these crazy people who are not happy. So how are we doing that?
Yeah.
Yeah. And because you're both intelligent people, you will be able to figure it out.
Right.
Yeah. And if not, then you go to a trained professional.
Exactly. I've considered that path.
Yeah. And you have to pay a lot of money.
Right.
And so if you do that, here is the trained professional I would suggest.
Okay.
An Imago therapist. Imago.
Okay.
Okay, they teach an Imago dialogue.
Oh,
that
wow.
is absolutely dynamite. You don't have to look at your toilet training in the process of resolving this issue. They teach you how to talk to one another in a way that enables you to really hear one another and realize that all that's going on is that you haven't been hearing one another.
Right.
It's truly every couple out there, even if you don't have problems in your relationship, just go and learn how to do this dialogue. And also, you know, they have weekend workshop kinds of things that you can do that everybody I know who has been says it's, you know, it's just the best thing that can happen for intimacy.
Oh, that's fabulous.
Yeah.
Because I feel, too, like we'll, you know, bring up a topic and it's, I just see so much baggage that I bring. Hear one thing, but I associate it with 10 other things.
Exactly. And
so that listening,
yes,
I think, is
Yes, and that's what the dialogue is designed to do. It takes you to a place of realizing, in your case, when you say that like that, mm-hmm. what's heard is something that you never intended.
Definitely.
Because, of course, we're hearing through child ears.
Yeah.
And then when we realize that, we get to a place of, oh, well, I don't want to do that to you. So how can I communicate this in a way that doesn't put you in that place?
Yeah.
And again, it's just an automatic getting on the same side to resolve the problem together.
Great.
Yeah. Very good.
Thank you so
Let
much.
Let us know, huh?
I will.
It's exciting.
Definitely.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks, Jenny. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. We're going to take a quick break here, and we'll be back in just a moment. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. My name is Michael Gray. Coming up in just a few minutes at 6 p.m. is At the Cafe Bohemian with DJ Deca, some world music. Please stay tuned. And we have a few minutes left here, and we've got another caller. I'd like to welcome Michael from Menlo Park. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Hi, Michael. Hi, Sherry.
Hi.
Good evening.
I'm glad that you're back, Sherry. I was beginning to wonder if you'd been captured by rebels or something. That's the way my mind works.
Yeah, well, if I hadn't come back, it would have been because I was staying voluntarily.
Oh.
Yeah, it's pretty it's a pretty gorgeous place.
Yeah, looking forward to hearing about it.
Mm-hmm.
This is going to be real quick. I didn't call in with a problem. I was reading your book this morning, your latest book, and then I had to decided yesterday that I was going to go to the beach today, so I went to Half Moon Bay, and I was walking down the beach, and I was just looking. It was not too hot and not too cold, one of those really great days.
Mm.
And I looked out in the ocean, I thought, I see some fins over there, and I walked on, and it was a couple of dolphins off, just barely beyond the breakers, swimming together. And I watched them for about 15 or 20 minutes, and it reminded me of your book, and it was really nice. And it also reminded me, when I can look at birds or dolphins or whatever it is, that I can see that life really can live itself.
Uh-huh.
But when I get around human beings, it looks like it's almost impossible. So that was a really nice experience for me to be reminded that if we, it's really possible.
Uh-huh. I kid the monks a lot. The monastery is in such a beautiful place. And when a person is going to be caught in their conditioning, when they're going to be what we call identified in one of those suffering states, the thing that they have to do is never to look up. Okay, so you see somebody walking around the monastery just fixed on their toes.
Yeah.
Because if you look up, you see the sky, you see the trees, you hear the birds. You...
Well, I had that very experience at the monastery. I was there on the There's Nothing Wrong With Your Retreat.
Uh-huh.
And one day I have a tendency to, when I'm walking, to put my head down, which is...
Uh-huh.
And I looked up one day, and the sky was this tremendous blue color. I nearly bowled me over.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And you just immediately, automatically disidentified.
I guess that's what happened.
Yeah. Then conditioning, the conditioned mind comes in. Well, yes, but what about? And then pretty soon, the head is back down and we're focused on our toes and lost in a world of thought that is usually miserable.
Yeah, I do that all the time.
Yeah.
I'll notice, in another place where I'll notice where I get, I have no idea why, I'll notice I'm in the grocery store. And then if I check in with my body, my shoulders are tense, and I'm worried about somebody running into me with another grocery cart.
Because it is a dangerous place to be.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, and that's such an important piece of it, isn't it? Because until we stop and check in, then all of this stuff is just on automatic. It's just going. So, who told my shoulders to go up there and do that?
Yeah, and I'll notice I'm in a checkout line, and then when I check with my feelings, it's impatience.
Uh-huh.
It's really weird how we must be conditioned to be just constantly impatient, no matter what's going on.
Yes.
A line, traffic, whatever it is.
Well, dissatisfaction maintains suffering.
Yes.
And I think most of us can check in and realize how often dissatisfaction is being maintained by whatever it is that's going on with us. So that, you know, the lines are too long and people aren't doing it right. And it should be this way. And it's not that way. And I don't like this. And I'm uncomfortable. And why is this? And we're kind of a nation that's focused on that kind of thing. And
yeah.
We get a steady diet of everything that's wrong.
Right.
And then internally, many of us have a pretty steady diet of what's wrong. And the result is a dissatisfaction that just keeps us in suffering.
Yeah.
Now, there's nothing really wrong, right? I mean,
well,
you know, there's a line at the grocery store.
Yeah, that's right.
Now, I just got back from a place where not only is there a line at the grocery store, there are no groceries in the grocery store.
Oh, boy.
But, you know, we lose sight of those little details.
Yeah.
So, you know, if there's everything in the world that you can buy in the grocery store, and, of course, everybody wants to be there getting all of that stuff, so, of course, there's going to be a line.
Oh, yeah.
And instead of, as we could, being focused on, well, isn't it wonderful, number one, that there's all this stuff, and number two, that there are all these people who can afford to buy it.
Absolutely.
I mean, this is a very good thing. What a party here that we, you know, we're all at the grocery store. Our conditioning says, well, you know, these lines are so long. Why does it take so long? And, you know, as if I'm going anywhere, you know, which is another thing that we often forget. So I get to the end of the line. I mean, what? So then I get to get in my car, and then I'll be annoyed at all of the cars that are out there on the road trying to go somewhere and keeping me from.
Yeah.
And it, finally, you know, kind of at the end of the day or the end of the week or the end of the month or the end of our life or whenever we get there, it's like, where was I going? You know, in this great state of impatience to get where?
Yeah.
And I think if we stop and look carefully, where we think we're going is to enjoying our lives.
Yeah.
So when I get through with this line, and when I get home, and when I get this, and when all of these things happen, then I'll enjoy my life. I'll be happy. And if we're not careful, of course, we never achieve that, because
right.
There's always the next irritating piece of dissatisfaction.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, those two dolphins today were not
looked like the cover of a book, huh?
Yeah, just
wonderful.
Like the cover of a book. Not only that, but later on, I was sitting there, and either an otter or a sea lion swam by, and I'd never seen one of those right there.
Wow!
So I had a.
You know, you should take off from work and go to the beach more often. I think we all should. I think that's
absolutely.
The message that we can take from your call.
What I'm so amazed is every time I go there, there's so few people there.
Well, yeah, because they're in lines, right?
Yeah, they're in lines.
I'm being annoyed.
Yeah. Well, we're glad you're back safely.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Michael. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, your new book that he mentioned is called When You're Falling Dive.
Yes, it is.
Has two beautiful dolphins on the cover.
Yes. Living happily, as Michael experienced, and
uh-huh.
It's acceptance, freedom, and possibility.
Possibility.
And I think that's kind of that's the place we go to in an experience like he's describing. They're,
yes.
You know, they're just out there, and they're just swimming, and as far as we can tell, just enjoying life.
Yes.
So, which reminds me of one of my very favorite. Did you talk about projection at the beginning of this show? I can't remember.
I can't remember
if it was this show.
No, apparently not.
But that my favorite on the topic, the two Zen types are walking along, and the one says, "Look at how happily the fish are swimming in the stream," and the other one says, "You can't know that those fish are swimming happily." And the first one says, "You can't know that I don't know that those fish are swimming happily." The greatest projection exercise in the world.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. So I will project that those dolphin were swimming happily.
Uh-huh.
And enjoying the freedom and possibility of their lives, accepting everything exactly as it was.
Uh-huh.
And we can be like that too.
No.
Yes.
All right. That's great. And I loved when Michael mentioned life living itself.
Yes.
And I can't remember when I first heard that phrase, but it just takes the sort of personal nature of all of our suffering away.
Yes. And if it can work for the dolphin and the otter and the birds and the trees and the ocean, mm-hmm. and perhaps it can work for us,
mm-hmm.
as well.
Wow.
Perhaps life can live us as efficiently and effectively and, in fact, joyously as it lives all of the rest of life.
Wow. Kind of takes the responsibility away from...
Yes. Well, we can accept the responsibility to enjoy it.
Yes.
Because that is the part that we have to add. That's our unique blessing as human beings. We have the choice not to enjoy, and we have the choice to enjoy.
Wow. Put that way, it seems obvious.
Mm-hmm.
Great. You've been listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. We're going to be on every week, every Tuesday from 5 to 6 p.m. Please join us. You can call us each week at 650-723-9010. You can learn more about what Sherry's up to at sherryhuber.com. That's spelled C-H-E-R-I-H-U-B-E-R.com. I'd like to thank Jay and Lori and all of our listeners and callers today.
Yes, it was great having so many people join us.
It was wonderful.
Yeah.
Please join us
thank
again
you.
Next week. Thank you.
Good night.
Good night.